And Kennedy Warner's with us to take us off a beaten track. That's a lovely one in the heart of Christchurch, that's for sure.
Yeah.
You're prone to a tad of philosophising, if I may say so, in the kindest possible way, Kennedy.
Oh, thank you.
And today we've got some. We've got the politics of disappointment and the literature of hope.
Well, I tried to think of something catchy, but yes, look, the... why did I say look? Oh, I hate saying that. Following the news is sometimes a... roller coaster of cognitive dissonance. The UN is a good philosophy.
Human existence is a roller coaster of cognitive dissonance. Anyway, carry on.
Well, so on the one hand, an interview on Radio New Zealand afternoons last week, ecological economist Victoria Kahui, who I've met in Otago University, about the legal personhood of natural entities, which of course gives voice to the non-human world and is a subject I've written and spoken about ever since this earth-centered recognition was pioneered at Te Uruwera, Whanganui River, and now Taranaki Maunga. You could call it Papatūānuku Rising. On the other hand, the runaway train that is the fast-track approvals bill and the prospect of zombie projects rising from the grave, Ruatanifa Dam, Trans-Tasman sand mining, Chatham Rock phosphate, Tikuha coal, all are possible. I see a movie title, Fast Track Return of the Living Dead. And many commentators, particularly the beloved Environmental Defence Society, so strong and clear about these matters, pointed out the environmental dangers and political jeopardy of this legislation, which the name of which puts me in mind of the road safety ad from 20 years ago, the faster you go, the bigger the mess. So Tikuha has been a particularly long-running recurring bad dream. For 10 years, Stevenson Mining has been seeking consent for open cast mining of a mountaintop site that happens to be a council water reserve in the hills behind Westport. The contentious proposal has been through the High Court, Court of Appeal, Supreme Court and Environment Court. And I've spoken about this to you in the past. And the company recently withdrew its latest High Court appeal and is conjectured to be one of the groups preparing to submit its proposal under the new fast-track consideration. I visited Tikuha in 2018. I had previously written about Tikuha's neighbour to the north, Denniston. Both are examples of a rare type of upraised sandstone plateau with a thin skin of soil. The place often is not darkened and clotted by clouds, but harbouring an almost audacious wealth of life. Something about this upland bog and its bonsai forests got under my skin when I was working at Denniston. Centuries-old trees, but which might not even come up to your knees. Great spotted kiwi, leaf-veined slugs. I spent many days and nights at Denniston walking this landscape with photographer Rod Morris, reaching my hand into tunnels in the moss, feeling for the shells of giant snails, watching a species of vagrant spider that lifts its forelegs like a boxer, turning over thin shards of slate and finding Peripatus, the velvet worm. I'm pretty sure I spoke to you one morning from the edge of the escarpment, an irresistible precipice where you could wish to be Icarus and soar across unbroken forest where birdsong floats upward on drafts of warm air, where mist drifts in from the Tasman, twining among the pillars and outcrops of this sandstone Stonehenge, a place local poet Lester Kyle once called an alien world of silences, but equally a wondrous world of creatures. And at Tikuha, one particular creature has been at the forefront of attempts to thwart Stevenson's determination to mine the plateau. The forest ringlet, which happens to be New Zealand's rarest butterfly, the only species within a genus that is only found in New Zealand, and one of its remaining strongholds is Tikuha. It's about the size of an admiral butterfly, the upper side blotched in orange and chocolate, the underside...
And Kennedy Warner's with us to take us off a beaten track. That's a lovely one in the heart of Christchurch, that's for sure.
Yeah.
You're prone to a tad of philosophizing, if I may say so, in the kindest possible way, Kennedy.
Oh, thank you.
And today we've got some. We've got the politics of disappointment and the literature of hope.
Well, I tried to think of something catchy, but yes, look, the... why did I say look? Oh, I hate saying that. Following the news is sometimes a... roller coaster of cognitive dissonance. The UN is a good philosophy.
Human existence is a roller coaster of cognitive dissonance. Anyway, carry on.
Well, so on the one hand, an interview on Radio New Zealand afternoons last week, ecological economist Victoria Kahui, who I've met in Otago University, about the legal personhood of natural entities, which of course gives voice to the non-human world and is a subject I've written and spoken about ever since this earth-centered recognition was pioneered at Te Uruwera, Whanganui River, and now Taranaki Maunga. You could call it Papatua Nuku Rising. On the other hand, the runaway train that is the fast-track approvals bill and the prospect of zombie projects rising from the grave, Ruatanifa Dam, Trans-Tasman Sand Mining, Chatham Rock Phosphate, Tikuha Coal, all are possible. I see a movie title, Fast Track Return of the Living Dead. And many commentators, particularly the beloved Environmental Defence Society, so strong and clear about these matters, pointed out the environmental dangers and political jeopardy of this legislation, which the name of which puts me in mind of the road safety ad from 20 years ago, the faster you go, the bigger the mess. So Tikuha has been a particularly long-running recurring bad dream. For 10 years, Stevenson Mining has been seeking consent for open-cast mining of a mountaintop site that happens to be a council water reserve in the hills behind Westport. The contentious proposal has been through the High Court, Court of Appeal, Supreme Court and Environment Court. And I've spoken about this to you in the past. And the company recently withdrew its latest High Court appeal and is conjectured to be one of the groups preparing to submit its proposal under the new fast-track consideration. I visited Tikuha in 2018. I had previously written about Tikuha's neighbour to the north, Denniston. Both are examples of a rare type of upraised sandstone plateau with a thin skin of soil. The place often is not darkened and clotted by clouds, but harbouring an almost audacious wealth of life. Something about this upland bog and its bonsai forests got under my skin when I was working at Denniston. Centuries-old trees, but which might not even come up to your knees. Great spotted kiwi, leaf-veined slugs. I spent many days and nights at Denniston walking this landscape with photographer Rod Morris, reaching my hand into tunnels in the moss, feeling for the shells of giant snails, watching a species of vagrant spider that lifts its forelegs like a boxer, turning over thin shards of slate and finding Peripatus, the velvet worm. I'm pretty sure I spoke to you one morning from the edge of the escarpment, an irresistible precipice where you could wish to be Icarus and soar across unbroken forest where birdsong floats upward on drafts of warm air, where mist drifts in from the Tasman, twining among the pillars and outcrops of the sandstone Stonehenge, a place local poet Lester Kyle once called an alien world of silences, but equally a wondrous world of creatures. And at Tikuha, one particular creature has been at the forefront of attempts to thwart Stevenson's detention with deep rust and charcoal stripes, both sides sporting a set of eyes. Well, you know, they look like eyes, those lovely things that butterflies often have. The caterpillar of the butterfly is nocturnal and feeds on cutty grass and snow grass. Adults live for 3 to 4 weeks. Well, what care I for a rare butterfly? I can hear the Minister for Regional Development, Shane Goodbye Freddie Jones, saying, one of the three ministers who proposed to judge the fast-track applications. As he said, gone are the days of the multicoloured skink, the kiwi, many other species that have been weaponised, there you go, to deny regional New Zealand communities their right to a livelihood. He continued, We are going to extract the dividend from Mother Nature's legacy on the Dock Estate in those areas previously called stewardship land. If there is a mining opportunity and it's impeded by a blind frog, goodbye, Freddy. I am struck by the violence of this language. It's a language of invasion, of demand, of disconnection from the world that gives us life. And reading these comments brought to mind a recent interview with the wonderful writer Mary Lynn Robinson, whose books Gilead, Leela, Jack, Housekeeping and others have entranced readers. She was asked by an interviewer, and she's an American, looking around our country right now, goodness and grace and mercy feel in short supply. I wonder if that makes you think any differently about the work you do or have done. To which Mary Lynn Robinson replied, I have to say, I'm surprised, shocked, disillusioned perhaps by the turn that things have taken in this country in the last decade or so. The vulgarity and mercilessness that have entered public conversation and a kind of meagerness and unwillingness to be a source of benefit to the people in the country at large. A stinginess has settled in that's intellectual and economic and appalling to me and contrary to any notion that I have of what is good. Another American writer I admire and have spoken with you about is Richard Powers, whose book, The Overstory, it's a few years old now, but still, if people haven't read it, get it, Hymn to Trees and Forests. How did we lose our sense of living here on earth? Richard Powers asked. How did we become so alienated and estranged from everything else alive? He made an interesting comment about his own writing career. He said, I was concerned as a younger writer in my 20s, 30s and 40s with the human sciences that amplify our ability to control and master and manipulate our situation here and to understand ourselves. But in my 50s and 60s, I've become interested in the humbling sciences, I guess I would say, that point our attention away from ourselves and onto other living things. And there's a lovely quote in The Overstory where Powers writes about the Greek word xenia, guest friendship, a command to take care of travelling strangers, to open your door to whoever is out there, because anyone passing by, far from home, might be God. Ovid tells the story of two immortals who came to earth in disguise to cleanse the second world. No one would let them in but one old couple, Baucis and Philemon, and their reward for opening their door to strangers was to live on after death as trees, an oak and a linden, huge and gracious and intertwined. And here's the point that Richard makes. What we care for, we will grow to resemble, and what we resemble will hold us when we are us no longer. Well, to me, this seems like an exhortation and a warning. We grow to resemble what we care about. If what we care about is capital, the dividend we can extract from nature, perhaps such a person comes to resemble something alien and robotic. On the land I care for in Northland, there's an ancient pahutukawa that has toppled at some point in its life and used, as it were, a branch to break its fall. That branch has rerooted and rebranched, and the tree is now a vast and fascinating labyrinth of life. Kotari, the beautiful, flashing, plumaged kingfisher, and Ruru call from its canopy. To come to resemble such a tree would be a glorious thing. Well, let me come back to New Zealand with the painter Colin McCann. And in his writings about his work, he was strongly of the view that people, nature and land had to be in reciprocal relationship. He saw his work as a painter was to open people's eyes to this relationship. And he put it this way. I saw something logical, orderly and beautiful, belonging to the land and not yet to its people. Not yet understood or communicated, not even really yet invented. My work has largely been to communicate this vision and to invent the way to see it. And of course he did do that with his work. I think often of the Northland panels and the lovely line in one of those painted panels, which describes a landscape with too few lovers. And Well, you know, some of these places like Ruatanifa and Te Kuha and Denniston, well, they have lovers, but they sometimes that love is not able to be sustained. It's a painful love, loving land, said McCann. It takes a long time. You bury your heart, and as it goes deeper into the land, you can only follow.
There you go.
There you go.
Thank you, Kennedy. I did warn
the Monday philosopher.
Hey, that's all fine. But you've just reminded me of the stewardship land, of course, which has been unresolved in between land for so long.
Ever since the dock was created.
Yeah.
And now maybe too late. I don't know.
Kennedy, thank you. Much appreciated. That is Kennedy Warne, who takes us off the beaten track.